All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Testing?
Testies?
Testies? 1, 2, 3?
Boner.
I don't know shit about fuck.
Fucker.
I like sucking, but I ain't gay.
Legit fat podcast.
Fuck those honkies.
Big ass.
Welcome to Costco. I love you.
He really knows how to suck some weird.
Welcome back to Legit Bat. I'm Joe. If you haven't listened before, you can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts. No longer on Rockfin. We touched on that last episode. But we are going to be on YouTube until we get booted off, which hopefully is never, because I put a disclaimer. You can see it in the show notes. I told the AI fact checkers not to get rid of my shit because it's only satire, only comedy, parody, you know, so we should be fine. We'll see how long it lasts. Ben and Jen cannot be here tonight, which sucks. Where's my buzzer button? Hang on. I'm going to find it. Hang on.
I work with retards.
Well, you know what? That's actually close enough.
That'll work.
Wrong button again.
Yes.
But my guests tonight are two fellers you might know, Jonathan and Sean from Meta Mysteries. And, of course, Jonathan is also on Cult of Conspiracy, which we have had on a few times in the last couple months, actually. And we went on their show, and it's always a good time. Jacob is not part of this show. He's probably been on there, though, right?
He was on one time, but that's because I hypnotized him to a past life regression.
That's fucking awesome. So the point of this show, though, and I'll let you guys kind of introduce yourselves separately or however you do your spiel at the beginning, but why don't you introduce the listeners to what Meta Mystery does as compared to Cult of Conspiracy?
So the Cult of Conspiracy is obviously more conspiratorial. We get into a lot of whatever is going on being uncovered from the past within the government, or just any kind of conspiratorial theories that are out there, just certain things that don't necessarily always make sense. So you have certain sleuths out there, like me and Jacob like to call ourselves in that area, and just really try and break things down and bring up all possibilities. Whereas this over here, Meta Mysteries, is my passion project. And it was something that I was just saying a little bit before the show that, you know, I would always try and have conversations like this, whether it's metaphysics or people who are psychics or past life regressions, near-death experiences, magic, witchcraft, all things spiritual. I mean, we've talked about all the different breeds of aliens allegedly that are out there, and it's kind of really all over the place, but it is something that we're both very excited to learn about. And we always say, you know, we're not teachers by any means. We're learning it as we go. And so that's something that we don't ever try and come off as like the spiritual teachers who know it all, because there's way too many of them.
Do a quick YouTube search, people. Look up Dr. Amanda Noel. You'll know what he's talking about.
Oh, man, they are in abundance. There will never be a lack of a spiritual advisor that has all the answers. That is always going to exist. Just go down, like, I'm from Louisiana, so just go down to Bourbon Street and hit any one of the 1,000 tarot card tables that, you know, somebody has just set up along the way, and you'll be able to see that. But that's not something that we like to do. We don't like to say things that are for certain. And as a matter of fact, the saying on our show is, you don't know what you don't know. And so we kind of just walk around with that mentality, like, well, what if we didn't know, you know, because there are certain people that they walk around and there's nothing wrong with it. Like, we've grown to kind of evolve into the creatures of habit that we, you know, eventually have become. But what happens if you didn't know something for sure? What happens if you opened up you know, the rabbit hole, the doorway, you know, crash the veil, and just what if there was another answer? And that's really what we're on this this show to do, is just kind of discover what the real truth is about what it actually means to be a human. Why are we here? Where are we going afterward? Where were we before? And, you know, it's fun learning about that stuff. And to be completely honest, I don't know how so many people are so sure, you know, like mm-hmm. that's something that blows my mind.
It's always a red flag. That, I mean, we say that a lot over here that, you know, it's a red flag as soon as somebody's super sure. And again, no shade thrown at people who are religious or Christian. That's my family. I'm probably more Christian than anything on, you know, else on this earth, on this flat, unmovable plane. But that's a nod.
You're
out
a flat earth guy, huh?
No, I'm actually not. It's just a nod to our flat earth listeners. But yeah.
there you go.
But no, yeah. So it's always a red flag when you hear somebody that claims to have the truth, and which that is most religions. And again, I don't have a problem with that, but I do have a lot of questions. And it seems like the last couple times we've talked, especially with Jacob on, we digress pretty far into like theological debates, and that's somewhere where you're never going to really get anywhere, but it's still fun to kind of talk about and see where people are coming from. Like, oh, you're raised like that too. Okay, cool. So what are the differences in our, you know, theological beliefs? And I mean, I have, like, we've been over, I think we did 2 hours with you guys one time about basically all of this. So I like that you can have a show like that where you're open to, you know, listening to any and all. And to some, that is heresy or sacrilege to listen to other points of view. But I'm here for that. I want to try on your hat for an hour and see how you think and why you come to those conclusions you do. And let's talk about it. So, Sean, why don't you give us a quick little intro on yourself, besides being Jonathan's cousin?
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, I want to say thank you for having us on your lovely show. And I appreciate you letting us speak our point of view. And as Jonathan said, you know, we don't know what we don't know. And sometimes we take certain topics and we'll just say, okay, let's say this is absolutely true. And let's just play around with it for a minute and see what that looks like, you know. And, exactly. And you know, I see certain things in the sky sometimes, and it doesn't look like other videos that I've seen of other people seeing things. And so who's to say what's really going on? Are we all kind of having our own individual experience? And so basically, you know, I went through, I don't know if you want to call it a paradigm shift, but basically reality all of a sudden wasn't what I thought it was. And I think we all have that, whatever it is, this imaginary understanding, it's underlying of what this is. You know, even if you don't fully know, you have a feeling of comfort of
something,
you know,
is off.
Right. Yeah. And so something happened with me and basically just kind of shifted my whole way of looking at things. And basically I came to the understanding like, oh, I don't know what I don't know, you know? And so basically this is what we're doing. We're just kind of trying to examine everything that we can and kind of just see what vibes and get rid of what doesn't.
No, I like that. It's like, I've mentioned this before, but it's the big jigsaw puzzle of life to be really fucking tropey, but it is. And you got to look in different spots for different pieces. Like there's some pieces that look like they fit and you're like, no, that could work. But then you find one later that you're like, oh, this is from this other puzzle, but this fits so much better into the whole picture of everything. So I think about doing this show as kind of, you know, looking through different puzzle piece boxes and trying to find the one that makes the most sense, you know, as far as the whole picture goes, which right now I think I've probably got about 2 corner pieces, maybe
best. Right, that's so, yeah, exactly.
And no, this that's is a 15 million right. piece puzzle, so I have a ways to go.
I feel that same exact way, you know, because, you know, for those people out there that do feel like they have it all figured out, look, it is a very comforting, you know, way of looking at this reality. But inevitably, something is going to shake you off of that very shaky foundation that you built your house upon. And, you know, there's going to be certain things that you may come across, certain information, or you may experience something that doesn't necessarily fit into your box. And that's where we like to dive into those holes. Like, why does certain like witchcraft stuff work? Why does certain magic work? Why is it that every time I hypnotize somebody for a past life regression, they see their entire past life? Like, where is that coming from?
Well, and this is where it gets real dicey too, because when you get the people, especially the super religious types, that think anything to do with magic, which I also call prayer, anything to do with magic is of the devil, because it's, I don't know, it's enforcing your own will on a situation or something, which is what praying is. You're not enforcing it, but you're asking for my will be done, basically, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, it just depends on the terms you use. I mean, I bet you could do a whole show on magic and just substitute prayer and present it to a Christian audience, and they'd back you 100%. It's just changing of the verbiage.
Wouldn't think any different.
Yeah, there are certain practices within witchcraft where they would speak words into their stew that they're brewing up, and people pray over their food before they eat it. It's all about putting good vibrations, good vibes into your food before you ingest it. And so it's all about the intention and everything else. And so it's really, there's this underlining thing across all belief systems, I think, that kind of have something to do with each other, but we call it different things. And so, yeah, dude.
And I think that a lot of what people believe is kind of predicated off of their experiences. You know, and maybe it's predicated off of experience. Maybe it's just, you know, handed down to you from your family. You know, maybe you went to church every Sunday whenever you were little. So now that's the thing you do, you know.
Nurture is a big part of your worldview for sure. Yeah.
100%. But there are just certain things that I have personally experienced. Sean, the same. I'm sure even you too, Joe. But, you know, there's certain things that, you know, I personally have experienced that I can't put it into a box. Like, there's no place to put it inside of this box. And I think really the main goal here is to just take that box and throw some fucking TNT into it and explode it to hell.
Because, well, first, you got to cut a hole in the box.
Reality doesn't fit in there.
Right.
No, I feel that same way. So it's like, you know, that's what we're fascinated about. Like, we're constantly doing shows that will further expand our consciousness or further expand, you know, the way that we look at this reality. And to be completely honest, like, our goal is to just trip each other out for an entire episode. Like, that's really what we want to do. Like, forget DMT, forget mushrooms, forget like all these different psychedelics. Like, we want the information to be psychedelic, and that's the most fun.
And there's plenty of that out there. That I always say that, you know, what we're living, and not just me, obviously, but whatever this is, whatever we're experiencing right now, is so much more monumentally bizarre than any of us can imagine. So that's why when, you know, weird stories come up, I mean, at this point in the game, I've been doing the show for long enough and just been a weirdo my whole life. So at this point in the game, though, when I hear something, I automatically go, wow, that'd be crazy if that happened. And, you know, it's some story of a dude getting abducted, a thing in his ass. I'm like, I'm not going to say that didn't happen. Maybe in your mind it did happen. I don't know. It very well could have. And I don't know what the fuck aliens are or what interdimensional beings are, or demons or any. I don't know what any of that is. For all intents and purposes, I've seen none of that my whole life. I've seen influences. I've seen, you know, nudges or nods in certain directions, but I haven't actually, with physical eyes, seen any of this stuff. So it is all just kind of up in the air, you know, anecdotal speculation, all that stuff. But guess what? That's fun. And it's fun to hear people talk about, which is kind of the point of this show too. It doesn't matter. You don't have to believe it. Just entertain it for an hour. Be entertained. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you'll think about it later when something crazy happens to you. Cause it does seem like a lot of crazy things are happening more and more to people. I've had plenty of weird shit happen that I can't explain, but your monkey brain goes, don't worry about that. That didn't happen. Make sure you get to work on time, you know, and pick up the kids from school and make that sandwich for tomorrow. That takes over so immediately that then, you know, 10 years later, you're thinking about, you're like, oh yeah, that weird thing did happen that one time. Why didn't I ever talk about that? That's crazy.
Right. Yeah. And that's one thing that we're coming to find out, as far as like even certain dreams that you might have. A lot of us will wake up and go, oh, that was a weird dream, and just get up and go about our day, just like you said. But really, what we've come to find out is that even our dreams is really just an experience. Like, you're having an experience for a reason. You know, you might not know exactly what that dream was really about, but subconsciously, you're trying to almost tell yourself something you need to know, that you're kind of like putting on the back burner in your logical world. And there's the imagination side of your mind where that, I think that's where a lot of the magic happens. You get into the flow state and all of a sudden time starts going, wait, where'd the last 2 hours go? You know, it's like time is elusive in that way. And so, yeah, this world is just like you said, it's abundant, and there's so much opportunity and potential for probably everything and anything.
It does feel like that, and that's what makes it so much fun. You know, like there, I believe that there's even religious quotes, I think specifically in the Bible, that basically says like, you're not don't even bother coming to heaven if you don't have the mind of a child, or something along those lines. And you know, I don't know what people do with that little bit of information. Like, what exactly does that mean? How can you apply that to your life? Does that just mean be more joyous for any old stupid reason? Or do you go back and try and go back into your mind whenever you were a little kid, look at the rest of the world, and just be like, oh, I don't know what any of this shit is. You know, I'm just gonna, you know, let my mind kind of fill in the blanks, and it makes it a little bit more magical in that way. And you
Yeah,
know, there's
so the
like,
faith or innocence of a child, that type of idea where you're going into it being like, I don't know shit. It's like when you go to a magic show and you're like, I want to be fooled. This is why I came here. So I'm gonna go in like I'm retarded and just watch it and have fun. That's what I always get from that.
Yeah, and when you're a kid, you're not even thinking like, oh, where's the trap door? Or, you know, like, where is he fooling us? It's like, wow, that's magic. He just made that thing disappear. And it's like,
I just had
that's
fun
the
here for
energy
10
you need to
minutes.
have just doing regular shit, you know, and energy goes where attention, or I'm sorry, attention goes where energy flows. And so if we're constantly focusing on like the negative shit, there's so much bad shit going on in the world. And I got to the point where I was like, you know what, I'm done focusing on that. Let me focus on the good shit in my life. Like my daughter and I, we went to In-N-Out Burger and to get some milkshakes, and we just laughed our asses off because I was just vibing with her. You know what I mean? It was like the happiest I'd felt in so long, just because I was just being silly and goofy and making her laugh, you
Oh
know. And
yeah.
that's where it's all about.
Just being present in the moment
Yeah.
is kind of what a lot of this stuff is always saying. You know, like some people say that, you know, the past and the future, they're both just illusions, that we have never experienced the past, and there's no way to prove that we experienced the past, you know, other than just your mind. And I'm like, all right, well, what about pictures? You know, what about videos? And like that has to be some kind of proof. But I don't know. I mean, I'm still trying to wrap my mind around a lot of that kind of stuff. And that's why we always say, like, don't let us be the teachers. We're just kind of presenting certain information in hopes that it can expand your mind and, you know, kind of get you out of that box that you put yourselves in. And one of the main things that we like to bring up at least once a month where we do this show, it's literally just a show where we read all of the newer near-death experiences. And there's this website called nderf.org. And it's basically a guy, used to be a doctor, and then I guess he had seen a bunch of people that were coming in to the hospital, and they would die for a couple of minutes, or die on the gurney, or die on the operating table, and then they would always come back with these fascinating stories, and he never really believed them until he eventually had an experience of his own, and it was super cool. But the way that that has kind of just, you know, paved the road ahead for him is that he just became extremely addicted to that kind of information. And so he started documenting all of it because he knew that it wasn't just a one-time thing that happened, or, oh, it happens very rarely. Like the amount of documented stories that have been documented on this website, it's by the thousands, if not the 10,000s of
What was the
people.
website, real quick? I'm going to throw it in the notes.
NDERF.org. It's a
All right, cool.
near-death experience research foundation.org. But anyway, so he's started, you know, he may like built this website to allow other people to document, you know, whatever they experience on the other side. And some of them are near-death experiences, and some of them are, they have like different terminologies, but some of them are out-of-body experiences, whatever. But what's very, very fascinating is that they're not all the same. Not everybody experiences the same exact thing. I mean, think about it. We don't experience the same exact dreams when we go to sleep.
Or
So
the
why
same
would we
exact
experience,
life.
or the
Right.
same exact life? Yes,
Two
or
people can look at the same thing and come away totally different with how they saw it. So that's how I love the NDE stories too. And it is weird how similar a lot of them are and how wildly different some of them are. And I think it is colored by your upbringing and your general perspective in life where, you know, people have the void. There's been people that have NDEs and it was just void, nothing. probably an atheist. That's what they imagine it is, right? So why wouldn't they experience that? And then Christians see Jesus or a light or, you know, whatever. But sorry, I cut you off. Go ahead.
No, I mean, and even speaking on the void, you know, I personally had a DMT experience, I think I told you about in the past, where I did experience the void. I didn't necessarily want to. I'm by no means an atheist or anything like that. And it has kind of befuddled me every day since then, to where whenever I even think about that, I feel like I'm garnering some kind of teaching from it, from every angle. I try and break it down from every possible angle. And I'll just say this, dude. I mean, yeah, I experienced the void, but I also experienced that I was inside of the void. Like, I was there to experience the void, you know? So it wasn't nothingness. I was there. And so, I mean,
somebody was still observing it, is what you mean.
I was still observing it. Yeah, I was observing nothingness. And, you know, that's kind of a weird place to be. And it was fucking scary. Like, I thought that I actually blew up this entire world. I thought that, like, literally this world was a matrix and I died. And therefore, since I died, everybody else died. And this whole reality ceased to exist. Almost like a game over. Like, you die.
That is kind of how it is, though, right? When somebody dies, the only person affected is everybody else except you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we've had a guy come on. His name was David Ditchfield, and his near-death experience was basically like he was in space, and there was like a waterfall of stars, and he thought about his family, you know, that he left behind, and he got sad for only a moment, and then he just had the understanding, like, they're going to be okay, you know, and he was just at full peace with that, you know, like it was totally okay for him to go, you know. And that whole story was like pretty traumatic, like how all that went down. But, you know, just stories like this that happen, it's like, you know, if anybody has an experience like that, you can't tell them they didn't experience that, you know. And so where does that come from, you know? Where is that just like a, is that just a transitional period before we go where we actually go when we die, you know? So,
and, you know, as far as the near-death experiences, a lot of people will say, well, the only reason why you had a near-death experience is because you had DMT secreting from your pineal gland, and they try and get real physical and materialistic with it. And my question is, okay, yes, yeah, scientifically, that is what's going on. Like, DMT does secrete from your pineal gland the moment that you die or near-death experience or something like that. Also, it's the same thing that happens whenever you dream at night. It's the reason why
you
dream.
Which is really comforting to me. You go out high as titties. So,
oh, dude, the best kind of fear. High, dude. Yeah. Yeah. It's like the best. But, you know, the people that look at this reality for the materialistic world, you know, and they'll, like I was saying, they look at that scientifically, and that's okay. Well, that's it. That's it's scientifically, it's explained away, and there's no spiritual nothing attached to it, nothing at all. It's nothing magical. You're just tripping. That's all. My question is, okay, but why is that happening? Why is that built into this system? You know, like, you don't necessarily have certain things within your body that you don't need. You know, you like the human body, and I would imagine that the human mind has evolved from needing certain things. But for some reason, it kept around dreaming. It knows that we need sleep, whatever this simulation or matrix is. Like, for some reason, we need sleep, even though it's definitely like a danger to ourselves to put us into that situation literally every night. You mean, go back and think about like the caveman, like they were probably like, oh fuck, man,
this is it.
I go, that's why they were in fucking caves. Because they're right. Like, I have to do this thing where I shut my eyes for 8 to 10 hours. I don't know why, but I have to do it. So I'm going to roll some rocks in front of this hole in the wall and really hope I don't get eaten in the next 8 to 10 hours because I have to do this.
Yeah,
because the main goal is just survival.
yeah, and so that's basically my point, is that, you know, if we didn't need it, why do we still have it, you know? And I think that that's probably going to be a mystery that is majority unsolved until we actually do get to experience that other side. But I like to think that that's kind of where consciousness resides, or that's where the soul resides, or that's where our energy resides, or something like that. Not necessarily only constricted to the pineal gland, or only constricted to the DMT that's naturally occurring within your head. Like, I think that that's probably just attached to it in some kind of way. And so, you know, this is the kind of stuff that we love talking about, is the near-death experiences. And I actually have one pulled up, if you're open to hearing about it, sir.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I just wanted to say real quick, though, yeah, I think of the dream world as kind of the in the Matrix, you know, to use a way overused example, but in the Matrix, when they're in the white area where he's like, this is the loading room or whatever, like, mm-hmm. you can do anything in here. That's what it kind of reminds me of, or like, you know, a blank Minecraft. I've watched my son play that. I don't play it, but it reminds me of that, where it's like, here you go, here's a blank canvas, do whatever you want. Like, this is the free zone. You can do whatever. And your brain is like, fuck yeah, I'm going to, and everybody knows how dreams go, but yeah, it's like a blank canvas for your brain to just do whatever it wants for 8 hours. And why did we keep that? And that goes into different perspectives. If you're going the evolutionary route, that's a mystery. If you're going the creation route, still kind of a mystery. Yeah. Like, why do we have to do that? What are you doing? And then you can get into the new age, and that's, oh, it's giving you omens or signs or your subconscious or however many ways you want to describe it. Still, nobody really fucking knows. And if they tell you they do, don't listen to them.
And I think that they're too hard. Well, and to go on top of that too, like, I think that let's go down the idea route here of the any kind of religious story being correct, right? And I'm not here to bash anybody who believes in a religion. Totally fine. I would much rather somebody be religious than an atheist all day long. But whenever it comes to religion, you think about the idea of whenever, like, every single thing that happens to a human, that had to have been coded. Everything that happens in this reality had to have been coded by some kind of creator. I mean, wouldn't you say that too, Sean? Like, if there's a creator, which, I mean, maybe there is, maybe there isn't, maybe there was a beginning, maybe there never was a beginning. Maybe it's just always going and it's infinite, and we just view it through that lens. But let's just play this little game that there is a creator. You can imagine that. I mean, look, you know, we were created on a specific day, you know, like the animals were created on a day, the vegetation was created on a specific day. We were created on a specific day with very, like, distinct features and very distinct things that we're capable of doing. I don't think that, you know, there's like so many examples that are just rushing through my mind right now of like, all right, if there's a creator and if it's that creator to that religious book, why did he create me with this or with that? Or why was a lot of different things kind of created? I don't know. I like to think kind of outside of the box and try and almost to put it into like Cat Williams' mind, he kind of tries to go into the mind of God. And I really love those kind of conversations. Like, what do you think God was thinking whenever, this is what Cat Williams said, he goes, what do you think God was thinking whenever he knew to put two stomachs inside of the cow? You know, like, very specific that cow needed two stomachs in order to survive. And I like to look at all aspects, like, you know, why is a male's G-spot in the asshole? I don't know. It just is, you know? Like,
it's so that every time you take a shit, you can get off a little bit.
Yeah, maybe that's what the case is.
No, but I mean, you could argue that shit all day too, like the creation versus evolution, and evolution as natural selection, and it's just an evolved process because of external, you know, things, and your body adapts to that or whatever. And you could do that. I mean, it is a nice little package with a bow on it to say it was all created and this is intentional. And mathematically, it does look like that sometimes when you're looking at the math of the universe and the Fibonacci sequence, all this shit. But it is funny. It's almost like Easter eggs. And that goes back to kind of simulation theory too, which doesn't exclude God by any means. A lot of people think that simulation theory means there's no God. No, somebody made whatever this is, whatever this mathematically perfect thing is that we live in.
Yep.
Somebody made that, or something programmed it, or I don't even know how that's arguable to think that it just came from literally nothing into all of this. That, I mean, Occam's razor, let's go. I mean, that doesn't, the more likely thing is that we're in some kind of simulation. Doesn't mean it's not real. Doesn't mean there's nobody who made it. It just is some kind of weird. It's the Maya. It's the illusion. Like,
yes.
So, but yeah, to think about the Easter eggs that the coders would put in there, I think we talked about it on a show or two ago, but there's a, it's a great show, a little bit woke sometimes, but it's called Mythic Quest on, I think it's on Apple TV, and it just kind of shows behind the scenes of people making games, and it's made by the same guys that made Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and it's got a lot of that same humor in it. It's, I fucking love it, but, so it kind of goes into, like, you know, the different behind the scenes video game stuff, and it always made me think of that, like, if they're planting Easter eggs on purpose just for, like, a gag. Mm-hmm. If they're made in God's image, wouldn't God do the same shit? Like, be like, mm-hmm. oh no, guys can have, you know, G-spots too, but it's going to be in their asshole.
Yeah. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
I mean,
high but five, bro.
But there's plenty of examples one. Like that. Like, plenty of examples of Easter eggs like that. Like, what the fuck is Deja Vu all about? Mm-hmm. Why? Why yeah. is that happening? You know, why does it feel so familiar? How can
Dude,
you be...
Jen?
Sure.
I'm sorry, not to cut you off, but Jen has a great theory on that real quick, where she thinks that deja vu is where, and she actually heard somebody else talk about this too, but where deja vu is like either an alternate timeline or maybe a previous life where you had the chance to make like a different decision. And so you get that like twinge of a
crossroad.
Oh, I've done this before. Yep. And then you got to think about what decision did I make right here? You know, almost like mm-hmm. a redo or like a mulligan for your life. But anyway, sorry, Jonathan, go ahead.
No, I mean, that's exactly right, I think, too. You know, it was just last week we I think we had bought like a dresser or something like that. And me and my wife were building it. It was like a dresser or like a kitchen island or some kind of shit. And anyway, so we were building it. And as I went over to the kitchen area, I turned around. I looked back at my living room and my wife is just sitting there right on the ground. The baby, you know, he's in his room sleeping. And I remember looking back at this and thinking, oh my God, like I've seen this before, like I've seen this play before. And so just going into what, you know, what you're theorizing there, I was getting a little bit frustrated at this fucking piece of shit furniture. I'm not going to lie to you. It's one of those IKEA bullshit.
I was going to say it was IKEA, wasn't it?
It was something like that. I mean, Amazon is the new IKEA, basically. But you get any kind of furniture, then you got to build it yourself. It's all made out of plywood and these shitty little Allen wrench screws.
You,
I'm like,
you what? Tighten the screw too tight, and the whole side is fucked now, and you got to glue it. Right. And, yeah.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, just a pain in the ass. And I was getting real frustrated because it just wasn't working. You know, we just couldn't figure it out. And I remember getting that sense of deja vu as I turned around and looked back at the living room at my wife and everything. And so if what you're saying is true, that could have been, you know, some kind of crossroads where I made a decision or maybe I said something that I shouldn't have said. Now that I had that sense of deja vu, I'm like, all right, let me calm down then. Like, it was weird that I was just like, all right, let me calm down. This is a good sign. I'm just going to not get too flustered here. It's wild whenever that shit happens, dude.
Yeah, it's like a notification from your other self. It's like, hey, bro, pay attention right here. And it's real... Mm-hmm. Obviously really subjective and, you know, personal to whoever is experiencing it, because you can't explain deja vu either. Like, mm-hmm. the best you could explain deja vu is I've done this before, and you're staring at your computer and you're like, obviously you got deja vu, you do that, you know, so many times a day. But mm-hmm. the feeling you get, we always talk about that too with either psychedelic trips or dreams, the feeling yep. you get from the dream is so much more important than the actual details yep. of the thing you were yeah. doing, because that didn't right. even make sense. Like, when you try to explain something in a dream where you're like, I was doing this but it looked like totally different than that,
right?
You know how that hears yeah. the people who are, I mean, how that sounds to people who are hearing it, it's like, no, I know what you're talking about, but I can't picture it. Could you draw yeah. it, maybe? Draw yeah. a picture?
But the feeling of that dream, like you said, just felt way more significant. And you tell somebody, and it's like, that's a shitty story, man. You know? Like,
know.
What was that?
That's why they say
no,
to keep
you don't
a dream
understand,
journal.
You know?
They say to keep a dream journal, and I've been meaning to do this for, like, I don't know, 10 years. But yeah, if you actually start to write down your dream, if you can remember it, and you want to do that at 3 in the morning when you're trying to go back to sleep, if you can do that, you wake up and read it, and you're like...
What the fuck is that?
Right. Makes no sense.
Yep.
Yeah, I've been trying to, you know, pay more attention to my dreams a lot more lately. Dude, I know that there's some people out there that hardly ever dream. Jacob, I think he said that he's dreamed like 3 times in the last 10 years. Like, it's not often that
he's an NPC. Confirmed.
Dude, I'm not gonna lie. I've been saying he was a part of a 3-letter fucking agency for this long time. No, I'm just kidding.
That's why he always wears sunglasses on the show.
Right.
He's like, oh.
He's got to cover up the reptile eyes, I think.
The reptile.
but no, like I'm somebody that I dream every night, and it's very escaping, you know, like if you have a moment in the morning where you're not thinking about it, it runs away from you just that fast, right? And so I remember I woke up this morning, as a matter of fact, and I was like, oh, I remember my dream. What was that about? And I started thinking about it, and I was thinking about it, and I was like, oh, that was stupid. I just went back to sleep. I don't even remember what it was now, but I was like, that's the dumbest dream I've ever had.
No, most of the time I remember, like, I'll remember right when I get up. Mostly I get up from a dream because I got to take a piss. So I get up and pee, you know, under duress because I'm like, no, I just want to sleep. I go take a long piss, come back to bed, right the fuck back out, usually. And then I forget that dream. The weirdest part is like 3 o'clock in the afternoon the next day, you'll get a flash of it. And I don't know, it's almost like a deja vu of your dream, but it's like where you think of something or you see a particular thing and you go, oh my God, I had this dream. And then you remember like 5 minutes of this dream. It just like comes back to you. And I don't know what that is. And most of the time, I kind of wanted to ask you guys about this too. Me and Jen both, probably because we live in the same proximity, but I've been having not the same dream every night lately, but the same vibe, for lack of a better word. It's almost like you're in the same dimension of a dream, but it's not the same dream, but it's really, again, it's hard to explain. It's like telling your dreams to people, but that's the best way I could put it. And this has been going on for like a month or two, where I'm in the same general area of my dream, and I get that same feeling, that weird gut or, you know, chest feeling sometimes when you think about a dream. You're like, oh yeah, I remember that. Oh, that was important, or that was weird for whatever reason. But I don't know. Have you guys experienced that, extended periods of like being in the same dream space at all?
I've had dreams that are reoccurring for sure. But as far as, you know, my wife and I experiencing the same dream, that's awesome. It does remind me of, I can never remember the name of this guy, but he was kind of the father of remote viewing within the CIA. And he went on, I think he went on the Rogan show or maybe Sean Ryan show, one of those. I know. But anyway, he went on there and he was explaining some of the certain modalities that are within remote viewing. And then he talked about this one experiment that him and this other guy did while they were, you know, working on this remote viewing kind of thing. And they were separated in two different rooms and they made a goal of going to a specific place, a coordinate. And that they made a goal to try and view something there. Anyway, they ended up meeting each other there inside of this remote view. And they had a whole conversation together. They had a whole conversation with a third entity that was there. And they came back and they didn't share that information. They were in two separate rooms on purpose for that reason, to try and prove it further that there's not like just somebody making some shit up. Right?
They should have put them in a Faraday cage just to double blind it, you know?
Right.
Yeah, well, they ended up coming out and they shared the same exact story almost word for word. And it's like, I mean, what is that then? You know, like this cannot be a strictly physical material reality that you always thought that it was. And that happens, you know, like this, the Matrix be matrixing sometimes, I think. And it is just the wildest things that will happen. And, you know, that's why we love the near-death experience conversation so much, because, you know, yeah, they're not all exactly the same, but they do kind of rhyme. They're almost like cousins, you know, like there's some kind of vibe there that just almost like collects all the stories in this fun, loving God universe vibrational bubble that, you know, kind of,
yeah, to be kind of reductive about it too, though, it seems like a lot of those things cross over. It's like a Venn diagram of NDEs, OBEs, you know, abductions, remote viewing, dreams. All of these kind of have one thing in common, where it's half real, or it's like, you know, how else do you put it? Like, it's kind of like it happened, but I wasn't there physically. And to say that to somebody, you sound like a fucking kook. I'm fine with that, and I'm actually glad it's been coming around more in the zeitgeist of this world, at least, where people are more open with this stuff now. They're more, and I think it has to do with podcasts like this and Rogan, and, you know, all the, it's kind of coming into the mainstream now, where people aren't as afraid to talk about, like, I had this weird experience, I don't know what to make of it, but it was real as shit to me. And I've had several dreams like that too. And I'm like, was that an OBE or just a dream? It happened at night while I was sleeping, but could I have possibly gone fucking somewhere else? Because I was not here. And you can tell by the way it feels, again, which is subjective. But I had a very intricate, like HD 4K fucking dream that I remember details of to this day, like it happened. And I mean, this is a couple months ago, but I told Jen about it several times because I'm like, no, you don't understand. I was at this place. I was doing stuff. And they always say you can't read in dreams. I read all the time in dreams. Don't always remember it. But no, I can 100% read in dreams. It's kind of hard and it's kind of blurry, but I can I can do it. I've done it several times. I've read music in dreams. So I'm like, that isn't just my brain just being weird and just having fun for 8 hours. Like, there's something else. I'm going somewhere else. Whatever that is overlaps into NDEs and OBEs. And I mean, to me, there is overlaps with all that stuff.
Absolutely. Oh,
dude, big time. And you know, we actually, one of our favorite guests that we get on the show is a psychic. Her name is Cassandra Van Zandt. And one of the things that she has said has always stuck with me. You know, she goes, well, look, it doesn't matter if it happened in your dream, doesn't matter if it happened during sleep paralysis or during a mushroom trip or during reality, like all of it is an experience. And that's something personal to you. And so, I mean, yes, I mean, but was your physical body necessarily there in that dream? No, but at least in the moment, it felt like it. Like in the moment, like it, you were there. Like that was
whatever makes you was there.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And we can't exclude it, you know, because it is, in fact, a part of this existence. And so why are we so quick to just throw it away?
Yeah. And if it's a part of your memory, what are you made up of but memories? If you think about, like, when you're talking about only the present moment, it's like playing a video game. Like, you can play a video game, but you know what the fun part is? Playing it. You can think about the things you did on that video game later and be like, oh, wow, that was really cool. I love that game. It's super fun to play. But really, the only fun you have playing a video game is while you're playing it. Or if you're a Gen Z, watching someone else play it on YouTube for some fucking reason. I still don't get that. But, I digress quite a bit on there.
That's actually a good allegory for life, too, I think, not to be corny. But, like, yeah, while you're playing it, it's fun. You know, you're in the present moment. You're very analytical about what you're going to do. Like, I love playing Madden, personally. It's like, I'm addicted to the fucking game. But, you know, I'm always thinking, oh, man, I wish I wouldn't have thrown three picks in that game or whatever the case may be, right? But in the moment, you're not worried about that. You're like, dude, this is fun. You know, like there's no repercussions. You can get a little creative. It's a fun time to live up in the nothing box. But most of the time, you're not thinking about the mistakes you made in the game. And you're definitely not thinking about future times that you're going to be playing it or worried about future times. Oh, my God.
If anything, you're looking forward to it because you're like, I love playing this. I can't wait for the future of this game.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's, I don't know, I think that that's probably how we're kind of supposed to look at life in general is, you know, be excited about the future. Don't necessarily be fearful about something that has already passed and live more in the moment, you know?
Do you think that everything is kind of predetermined, or are you of the belief that we can kind of not create, but like make something happen or change something from happening?
Oh, are you talking to me?
Oh, yeah. I know how Jordan feels for the most part. But
I'm definitely not a determinist, but I'm not, or a fatalist, or, you know, whatever you call that, destiny, fate. I don't think everything you do is outlined somewhere where that's what's going to happen.
Right.
But it is weird because from the future, everything that happened did happen, and it was always going to happen that way. That's why I have a problem with time travel, especially into the past.
Right.
But whatever happened did happen to some degree. So does that mean it was predetermined, or was that just a result of cause and reaction along the way? It's such a hard thing to do because, you know, people, especially Christians, like to tout free will. Like, you have free will. But from God's perspective, He already knows which choice you're going to make every time. So yes, while you made that choice, God, however you conceive of that, already knew what was going to happen. So is it really free will if, you know, the ending is already predetermined? That is determinism, though. The Bible is determinism because they know in the end God wins and we all live in heaven forever. Amen. So That's pretty deterministic, though, isn't it? That means you don't really have, I mean, you have technically free will, according subjectively to you, you do. But from a, if you zoom out, it's not that you didn't have a choice. It was just that you were always going to choose something no matter what.
Right.
So I'm somewhere in the middle there. Because
yeah,
like,
that's what it's always confused choose me to, about it.
To choose, I could choose to drink this water or this beer right now. And I have free will, right? But once I do, that was always going to happen because that's what happened.
That makes sense. The thing that I never understood about that, if God knows exactly what we're going to do already, then, you know, then it's almost like he created, let's say, okay, that all of my decisions have led me to go to hell, you know? So he created me knowing I was already going to go there.
I had that problem too.
You know what I'm saying? That's the one thing that I think about that I'm like, I don't know about that. You know, I don't think God would create us just to go to hell so that others can go to heaven.
Well, according to Christians, he didn't, because you always had the choice. But if God is omniscient and knows the beginning and the front, end and the back, whatever, then he already knew before he even created you, this one isn't going to make it because of certain decisions and he's going to end up dying going to hell. But it's like, I always liken being God is to like watching a movie you've seen a million times where you know exactly what happens in each scene. And you're always like, don't go behind the chainsaws. That's where the danger is. But you know, they're going to do it anyway. It's like they technically had free will, but you already knew they were going to go behind the chainsaws, get cut up, and then they were going to die.
Right.
So that's how I look at it. I mean, I've yet to hear a good argument against that. If there's any Christians out there, I welcome it. Come on the show. Tell me about it.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh no, I still have questions.
Even in the woo-woo crowd, you know, certain people will say, well, yeah, you signed a contract and, you know, you came here to learn this specific thing. And even that, I'm like, I don't know about that. I feel like we do have free will. We can do kind of what we want. And
well, if you
don't
signed
like
a contract,
going,
but you don't remember signing it and they put you into this new body or whatever, that seems like a breach of contract to me.
Right.
Because I don't remember doing that. So
yeah, I didn't agree to these terms, man.
You know? Yeah, a lot of it to me, it just seems very mythological. And I don't think there's any problem, you know, looking at it in a mythological sense. Like, you know, you got Billy Carson going on there and he's talking about, you know, the Sumerian scrolls and the Emerald Tablets and all that kind of stuff. And he's almost trying to relay a story that's like, see, this is actually what it is. And I don't even want to go that far, because if you read into the Sumerian, like they're the ones that believe in the Anunnaki and Enki and Enlil, and they created us to be slaves on this slave planet to mine gold for them. And Enlil didn't necessarily even want to create us, but Enki was just like, well, we need somebody to do our slave work. But they take that story literally. And I think that even Billy Carson was almost trying to make a point to make to take that story literally. And I'm just like, could it just be a myth? Could it just be an allegory? What can you garner from this story? You know, let's just say that it actually did happen. Well, didn't happen to me. I wasn't there and I can't prove that it happened. So what can I take from that story? And I think that's really the biggest thing. You know, like whenever you start looking at certain biblical stories, I mean, even think about the Greek gods, like any of the Greek gods.
You
or
mean
any-
every NASA mission ever, those Greek gods?
Yeah. Or like, am I to think that like Odin and Loki and Thor and all of them are just up there, you know, and they have these magical kind of powers, or could they have possibly been?
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
Some kind of allegory, some kind of code.
The archetypes.
You need some kind of key to tap into that, you know, whatever the case may be. But I do believe that exactly what you said, they are just archetypes. And so, you know, just stop taking everything so fucking serious. That's really the whole point of all of this kind of stuff. Like, just stop taking everything so literally. And that's what we like to do. You know, like some people will say that, you know, there's the... Oh, damn it. What is it? The esoteric and the exoteric. You know, a lot of people that take the Bible literally, that's more of the exoteric, whereas the esoteric understanding is more of you know, what's the spiritual understanding? What is it trying to tell you in these parables, in these allegories, in these, you know, short stories, these myths? Like, what can you garner from it? And that's all I think that you can safely do. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Definitely doesn't belittle the story. Like, I'm not going to sit over here and say that Jesus never lived. I don't know. I wasn't there. How do you prove something like that? You know, you can have the faith and all that kind of stuff. And if that's somebody you choose to believe in, like,
cool. Well, I think the archetype of Jesus has lived in several people, and not to mean all these people are God or the Son of God. I'm not trying to do that. I think that archetype of Jesus, the perfect man that we all strive to be, has been in several cultures under a different name.
Yep.
And it's something to shoot for, shooting towards the mark, and we all miss the mark. That's sin, right? So we all miss it, but we're all still kind of aiming for that and hoping to get there. I mean, I personally have never gotten anything out of the Bible that was bad or negative to me. Like, I've never read the Bible and then gone and robbed a store or killed people in a school or something. You know, some people will say that God made me do it, whatever. Okay. Well, you also have mental problems. So, okay.
Right.
But yeah, I grew up with the Bible. I've read the Bible. I have a Bible. Like, I don't read it as much anymore because I have a general understanding of most of the things it says, but at no point has the Bible ever encouraged me to go do something terrible. Mm-hmm. But neither has any other book, to be fair. So I don't know. But when you have these people that it is a teenager thing, kind of, you know, when I'm speaking from experience here. When you grow up that Christian, you're going to rebel against it and do the opposite just to see how that is, because it was so taboo. You know, it's the taboo. It's the forbidden fruit. Literally, I'm going to go do these other things. I'm going to go do drugs because you always said that was the worst thing I could do. I'm going to go do that. I'm going to go break every one of God's rules to see how that is. Personally, never worked out that well for me. I don't know too many people who it does. I mean, the Bible doesn't technically say don't do drugs, but your body's a temple, whatever. So, there's no negative to that. If you treat your body like a temple and want to put clean stuff in and not put toxins in and all that, there's nothing negative about that if you want to interpret it that way. Mm-hmm. So whether you're being dogmatic about it or not and saying, oh, you know, you should do everything the Bible says because that's how we live, and then when we die, we go to heaven, and we'll get a not a balcony seat in heaven. We'll get a closer seat, you know, because we didn't do all that. I don't believe that either. Go do all the drugs, drink all the booze, smoke all the cigarettes. I don't think that matters. Whatever comes after this, you're going to fucking die anyway. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying just fuck it, it's the Matrix, go kill people. Now, it's nothing to do with that. Do what you think you should in the moment. Mm-hmm. Again, living in the moment. And everybody knows what that is. I've harped on this so many fucking times. Everybody knows in the moment when they have a choice to make, you have that Geppetto, or not Geppetto. What's the Pinocchio guy?
Geppetto's the guy that created Pinocchio.
Right. What was his conscience? Oh,
the little grasshopper.
Yeah. Whatever his name is. Everybody's got that guy sitting on their shoulder. That was such a crazy movie for that point only. Or at least from that point. But everybody's got that. I've told Jen that a million times too. I'm like, people might not know like the letter of the law and like what you should do and not do, but when you're faced with a choice of like, I should do this or that, you automatically have a moral compass if you're not a psychopath. Mm-hmm. I know I should do that. Now, whether you choose that or not, here's the free will thing. Whether you choose that or not is a different story. Mm-hmm. Most of the time I choose the other one. I shouldn't drink tonight. I got to get up at 6 tomorrow. 9 times out of 10, my stupid ass is going to be like, well, I could probably have a beer or two.
You think you can get away with it in the moment.
But I knew, especially in the morning, I knew what I was supposed to do at that point, and I didn't do it anyway. And that's on me. This is where people have to take responsibility for their fucking choices. Oh, you could blame the car in front of you for being slow, but you left late because you got shit hammered last night. Don't lie to yourself. That's what happened. So, and I realize that a lot. Not so much recently, but yeah. Anyway, I yammered on for a bit now. You guys got any thoughts on all that?
Well, yeah, and I just looked it up, and I can't believe that none of us could think of Jiminy Cricket's name. But
oh my god!
But anyway, yeah, I do like that. You know, that idea that Jiminy Cricket is essentially the subconscious or the higher self or God or whatever that is, and I think that we all do have that, and that thing is always telling you. Or giving you some kind of sign, like, don't do that, you should do this, right? Like, anytime you go and make a decision, for some reason, we always know what the right decision is. We don't always agree with it. We don't always follow through with it. You know, like, should I brush my teeth in the morning? Yeah, I probably should. I'm probably going to forget about it, and maybe I'll do it after lunch or something like that, right? Like, just tiny little things like that. And, yeah, it is interesting, but I mean, just getting back to this whole near-death experience thing, I do have a story here that I did just want to read. It's a little bit long. It shouldn't take too long, but it's one of those more fascinating stories. And actually, on the NDERF website, it's labeled as an exceptional near-death experience, which are always the best ones. And that was actually...
Oh, is that the one you were trying to tell us about like an hour ago before I cut you off?
A little bit, you know. No, it's fine. Nice. Like I love it. I love these, you know, the all over the place kind of conversations. That's pretty much what we do on our show.
That's
too.
All we do. Yeah.
Yeah. But this actually, I believe it happened February 21st, or at least it was documented then. But he says right here that it was 5 years ago. But anyway, this guy, his name is Andre, and he's a Frenchman, so it's kind of been translated. So there might be some words that I stumble across because they don't make sense in the English language. But to be fair, there's
can
a lot
you
of
share a screen, or do I have that enabled?
Yeah, I can share the screen real quick.
Yeah, do that.
Let's see here. All right, here we go. Okay, so this is Andre, and it says, it was Friday afternoon. For 2 days, with the help of Mark, a work colleague, I tried to elucidate the breakdown of a spectrometer, which is a machine allowing the analysis of particles suspended in a liquid. Shortly after 3 o'clock, I sat on a high stool and reached out for the plasma torch enclosed in the center of a 2-meter-high square metal column. To access certain mechanisms, I had to take off the protective walls around the metal column. My body was resting on the wall while both of my hands were resting on the upper edge of these two walls and perpendicular to the previous one. My balance was unstable. I didn't know much about this device. I positioned myself to check the lighting of the torch, and it was Mark who was in charge of starting it up. We were facing each other, but he was offset from me by about 2 meters to my right. He was managing the control panel and was absorbed by the computer screen, which displayed the parameters that we had been waiting for 2 days. He asked me if it was okay for starting it up. I answered, okay. He pressed the switch with his gaze fixed on the control screen. I was completely paralyzed and stuck to the metal. Instantly, I felt such intense heat and unbearable physical pain. I screamed out, but no sound came out of my mouth. I understood that I was electrocuted, and I knew that I was going to die. I didn't know yet that my chest was firmly supported by 4 electrical resistors parallel to each other in the direction of height. The highest of these, located below the base of my shoulders, carried a direct electric current of 4,000 volts under 5 amps. The second resistor, at the level of my heart, carried an alternating current of 220 volts under 10 amps. As for the resistors, there were low voltage currents at low intensity. So he shocked himself, basically, big time. It says, I had a dialogue with myself. No, I don't want to die. It's much too soon. There's so much to leave. No, it can't be the right time. It's absurd, completely stupid. There are my children. They're still too young. I can't abandon them. I love them so deeply. What will happen to them without me? Why me and why now? I'm the father of 3 adorable boys. And I'm horrified, but what to do? Mark wasn't looking at me. He was too absorbed in analyzing the parameters. He didn't realize anything was wrong because I couldn't make a sound. I couldn't take it anymore. This suffering was unbearable. The torture had to stop immediately. I felt all of my strength leaving me. All of my physical and psychological resistance was fading, and I finally surrendered to death. The images of all my material attachments paraded before my eyes. My car, apartment, furniture, objects. I was abandoning them forever. Then came the images of all my emotional attachments, my children, my parents, the woman I loved, my friends. I was leaving them forever. This process was fast, intense, and irreversible. Finally, my own image, the identification of my personal identity, was definitively erased, completely freed from all of these attachments, free from these concepts. Andre no longer existed. At that moment, I opened a door onto an infinite, very happy consciousness. I was dazzled by an intense luminosity, submerged by an immeasurable, omnipresent, and eternal love. I was nothing more than a gaze that saw more than 180 degrees with extraordinary accuracy. I floated above this body, trembling under the effect of the electrocution. I was so happy where I was that I found the horror of that situation completely normal. There was no more physical pain, no more conceptual thoughts, no more boundary between life and death, no more difference between good and evil. Words were useless because everything was love and I was eternal. I remained a completely neutral witness, completely free and completely happy. I was invaded by a love of divine power that abolished all fears, all nauseating thoughts, all notions of time and space. It was more than wonderful. I let myself go towards this Garden of Eden, where everything was more beautiful. The colors were more vivid, the sounds clearer. I developed an unsuspected extra lucidity and authentic feelings that were much more intensely felt than anything that I knew from before. Like a flash, I glimpsed what my life was, and I realized that many unjustified feelings had deprived me of real happiness. I loved sparingly with an overdeveloped sense of discrimination. I understood that I was afraid to love, and I felt a lot of bitterness looking at this poverty. I discovered that love is our true nature, and weakness in this area has disastrous consequences for our own lives and for humanity. Paradoxically, where I was, all life had meaning. It didn't matter if my experience had been good or bad, happy or unhappy, long or short. It didn't matter because everything was good. The alchemy of love allowed the true knowledge of everything in the universe and justified all personal or collective destinies. There was a luminous presence so loving that I felt loved. I felt as loved as I had ever been. Its radiance invaded my soul and its knowledge was infinite. I knew that I was in a world where everything was possible. There were no more obstacles. My mind could move in the three dimensions at the speed of intention. After having risen in this divine space, it was without hesitation that I instantly went back to navigate above the playground of my little David's nursery school, his kids' school. I no longer had any spatial or temporal reference points, but I knew that he was there. I looked at him intensely and felt our love with an emotional power born from a work of art. I experienced such love with delight. David was having fun with his friends, laughing happily. I perceived his laughter with the accuracy of a high-fidelity harmonic clarity. I approached him. His face radiated a great joy that flooded my incorporeal being. It was a true cosmic fusion. In the same way, I also visited my other two children, Alexander and Kristoff. What a cool name, Kristoff. Anyway, they were in class at the primary school located 1 kilometer away. They were respectively in class, studious, and diligent. I looked at them with the same happiness. At the risk of interrupting my story for a few moments, these schools are 2 kilometers from the scene of the accident. But ultimately, this precision is unimportant because if they had been located several hundred kilometers away, I would have gone there as well. I would have assured you of my certainty. My pure spirit rose into an infinite space of luminous clarity. I felt myself contemplating with delight, with the delight of a sun radiating an incandescent love. At the heart of this light, I saw with an unusual clarity in the faces of my children as I had never seen them before. Through their own voices, the children asked me to return to my body. They wanted me to find my body so they could quench their thirst with the radiance of the love that now lived in me. It was a purely telepathic language. I could not escape the force of this will, despite my ardent desire to remain in this paradise. I returned to float above my body again with the vision of an image, grouping their luminous faces surrounded by a halo of shimmering colors. Through a kind of indefinable telepathy, according to the criteria that I know, I asked Mark in my mind to press the emergency stop button. He did so immediately and everything stopped. Afterwards, Mark told me that he reacted instantly, saying, "I did it. because I felt that an abnormal phenomenon was also occurring. I had to immediately stop the operation of the machine. I reintegrated into my body as my vision narrowed. I had to make this return to fully realize my path with an accomplishment and transmission of the love that I had received. I was so happy where I was that it was hard to come back to my body. It was also a seal of inescapable responsibility for the peace of my mind and the emotional balance of my loved ones. The choice of birth and death does not belong to us. This decision comes back to this dominant conscious or cosmic presence that I felt so strongly. This being was so whole, so luminous, so loving that I wouldn't dare call it God. It had nothing to do with the God of religious books. I felt pain and I noticed my body was paralyzed. My heart beated weakly and I had difficulty breathing. The inside of my hands were burned. My arms and shoulders had undergone such a violent twist that I looked like an old tree, emaciated by a wear of time. I felt very humiliated by this bodily state and like a prisoner for a moment I wished with all of my energy to return to the other side, but it was impossible. So anyway, it goes on and on, but you kind of get the gist of the story that, like, dude, I mean, and this is not a one of a kind. Yeah, maybe specifically it's a one of a kind kind of story, but so many people talk about the experiencing of something that you can't even put into words. And like, he, I'm sure, probably even feels that way. I thought he wrote it pretty beautifully.
I was going to say, he waffled on pretty good. He put it into a lot of words, but that's good for him. He might be a more talented writer. If I tell you my dream, it's going to be like, I don't know, I did some shit and then there was this building and I took a piss and then I drank.
The building looked familiar.
Yeah, you know, but it wasn't. It was my house, but it wasn't, you know, that kind of thing. So yeah, he did a great job of
looked different.
Yeah, he did a great job of explaining that, and I wish I could do that because that's how I want to describe my dreams. That's like my goal, like to describe it like he fucking did. I mean, I know that wasn't really a dream, but yeah.
One thing that we find. Oh, go ahead.
Oh no, the thing that sticks out to me though is that a lot of these things people say are realer than real, or they're hyper real, or you know, they see colors that you can't describe because I've never seen them before,
which
things
doesn't
like
make
that
sense, right?
No, and it doesn't make sense to our little monkey brain, but I always bring up, it's my favorite thing ever, that we can only see like 0.001% of the visible light spectrum with our physical eyes. If you think about that, maybe smoke a little weed first then think about it. That is mind-blowing. That means that, like, most of what's going on around us, we can't fucking see.
Most of
so
reality.
So who are you to say what's going on and what isn't, or whether you're tapping into something when your brain changes channels at night or whatever. Like, it's so retarded me. Like, even when I'm out, like, on a clear day and looking at the sky, I'm like, wow, it's so beautiful, so clear out today. Not thinking that there's, like, I don't know, 97 million things going on right now that I just can't see, but they're doing it. It's happening right here, right in my face, in my mouth, everything. You just can't see it.
Right.
That's wild.
And another interesting thing that, and we see this a lot too, as far as the experience, the way that it ends, you know, like sometimes it'll be an entity that says, oh, you know, you can't go now. It's time for you to go back. And then whoosh, they go back to their body. And it seems to be so timed perfectly. Like this person telepathically tries to communicate with his coworker, like turn the off switch, you know, and then all of a sudden he turns it off and he comes back and he's able, you know what I'm saying? And so it's not like he came back to his body and then he had the thought like, oh, I think I told you to turn it off. It was more like in the experience, he told him to turn it off and then it happened.
And this is all within what? Like a quarter of a second.
Probably
all that shit happened. Like the time dilation, that's another one I don't understand. Just a quick aside, I had a roommate back in like 2015-16 that I lived with for about a year right before I met my wife, and he died in a couple years ago, way before his time, drank himself literally to death. He was yellow when he died. Like and he was like 44 or something. Like, he shouldn't have died, but that was his thing. I don't know. That's his, who am I, you know, to say. But he's shown up in my dreams frequently, and I only lived with this dude for a year. I'd known him for a while, but I only lived with him for a year. But he made such an impression on not only the name of our show, literally, but like the whole
way I met my wife and when my brother was involved in it, like the whole thing, he was an integral part of our life for a while. So for him to show up in dreams all the time is really weird. And every time he does, this is like a week ago maybe, and I was telling Jen about it. I'm like, dude, Tony showed up in my dreams again. But we were just hanging outside like we usually did, and in the dream, I was actually confused as to why I was so surprised to see him. This is a weird thing. Like, I saw him. It was no big deal. Hey, bro. Oh, hey, good to see you. I didn't know you'd be here, you know? And in the dream, I'm like, why am I so surprised that he's here? Like, it's Tony. Like, who?
It's
why?
Normal.
And then right. I woke up. I'm like, oh, that's why I'm surprised. He's fucking dead.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy shit.
Right. Yeah. My wife has actually had experiences like that too. Like having a dream about somebody that has passed, and he'll say something like just a few words, you know, like a literal, like short and sweet message. That's the only thing he wanted to say. And so then you kind of think like, was he there just to give you a message? You know, was that person actually visiting you?
Just to say hi.
Yeah. And we went to his funeral actually. And I shit you not, like everybody that I saw, I felt like it was him. Like for whatever reason, they slightly resembled him, and it like I could have swore it was the guy, you know. And it was like happening that whole day. It was like his essence or his energy was just in the house, you know. It was so weird.
Maybe dreams, you know, they talk about, you know, if you hear like a lot of the alien and the ET stories like that, stuff like that, they say that they won't invade your free will. That essentially, like, you kind of got to call on them or ask for them to come into your life or something like that. They need some kind of permission. But I bet you that permission does not apply to dreams. And it probably doesn't apply to meditation. And it probably doesn't apply to a psychedelic experience, that because it's not coming in the physical reality. It's more so coming in like another dimension in which for some reason you have access to only inside of your mind. But in this physical reality, nobody knows where it
is. Especially if you're doing psychedelics, that seems like signing a waiver to me, where you're like waiving, you know, forfeiting any like whatever's gonna happen is gonna happen. So yep. And that's scary too, because you don't know what the fuck you're inviting in, depending on how you look at things. But and you know, it could be dead people talking to you, or it could be some low level entity that's trying to fuck with you. Like, how do you know? And the reason, or the way I always look at it is, was it good in the end, or like the fruit of, you know, what happened? Mm-hmm. Was it a net positive, or was it something terrible? Because if it's terrible, then you can kind of judge that spirit accordingly. But like with my dream about my roommate, it was great. It was like we were hanging out. I'm like, I'm not saying that was him visiting me. Could have been just been my brain being like, oh yeah, I remember this guy. We used to hang out with him all the time. Like, I don't fucking know. But it was cool anyway. So the net positive for me was I woke up going, ah, fucking Tony. Like, I miss that guy,
right?
You know,
right? It just to get you to remember and experience him again, you know.
Yeah.
And if that was all it was for, then hey, like you said, net positive.
Well, Jonathan, did you have anything else about that that NDE experience you wanted to talk about? Because that was an epic fucking story. So did you have any other notes or takeaways from that?
I mean, I just really wanted to bring it up as an example for the people that have never heard of somebody describing a near-death experience, and just try and see how that fits into your scope of reality, in a sense. You know, like the moment that we die, what happens that next moment? You know, does it take a little bit of a while to go to heaven or to go to another life or to be reincarnated? Does it take a little while to experience nothingness? And, you know, because a lot of these people who are having the near-death experiences, there's no such thing as nothingness. And even if you are experiencing nothingness, as I was talking about earlier, you're still there to experience it. So something is always existing in some kind of sense. And I think that this reality, that story right there is just one of the breadcrumbs that will lead you to discovering what is the nature of this reality. Why are we here? What is the whole point? Like, is this a dream? Is it a nightmare? Is it a matrix? Is it a simulation? Is it God's creation? Are we living in a universe? Are we inside of a video game? Like, so many people have so many different thoughts. And
people get so angry if you disagree, by the way.
That's the
problem. For the listeners out there, people will get fucking angry. Trust me.
So why is it that there's 10,000 plus examples of near-death experiences? Are they all lying to you if you disagree with that story? You know, like, are you going to call somebody else a liar for having them experience something? I don't know about you, but whenever I'm like purposely trying to tell a bullshit story, I'm not going into that much detail, bro. There's not, where are you pulling it from? You can only pull it off the top of the dome.
That is the high strangeness part of a lot of this, alien abductions or OBEs, whatever. The high strangeness part of it is like you either sat up for a while and did a lot of drugs thinking this shit up, or you experienced something, because that's something nobody would think of. The little details, you know, like, oh, he had almond-shaped eyes, but in one of them, there was, like, a topaz. Or, you know, all this weird shit you get from these stories where you're like, either you're insane or something really fucking weird happened to you.
Something
I don't know.
Happened.
And they're usually tiny little details that if you said it or if you didn't, wouldn't really make a difference in the story. You know,
right.
Like, just that little bit of information, like, did it change the story at all? You could have told the exact same story without that detail and it wouldn't have made a shit. So I like doing that kind of stuff. You know, I like kind of vetting in my own kind of way of like, all right, are they actually explaining this to the best of their ability? Are they fluffing it up a little bit? You know, because there are plenty of people out there, unfortunately, that are so full of shit that just want a little bit of attention. They just want a like on their post. They just want to be seen. And so they come up with this extravagant story, or they have this insane ability, and then whenever they're kind of put on the spot about it, you can call it out. It's so easy, and that's
it falls apart pretty quick sometimes.
And that's what's so unfortunate about certain psychics and tarot readers and, you know, channelers and shit like that. There are, I personally believe all of those things are absolutely real. Like the other world, the other dimensions of the metaphysical realm is absolutely there, and I do believe that some people are getting in contact and are communicating with that other side. But then there's other people who are just so damn full of shit, man. And that's what makes this so muddy, you know? And
no, and I love what you said there. Some people are tapping into whatever that other side is. Here's the weird part. New Agers will basically tell you that's all good. It's all positive, love and light. They're here to help us, that kind of idea. Christians, on the other hand, will say it's all demonic, obviously, because it's not the Bible or whatever. So you have these two different things, and here we are in the middle. As far as I can tell, we're all pretty much on the same wavelength here, where I'm like, it can be good or bad. Again, not to go to my biblical training here, but test the spirits. Bible didn't say there wasn't spirits. It just said test them. Make sure that they're what they say they are. If you're in contact with a spirit that's like, I will give you riches, or I will. All you have to do is go on this wild goose chase in Venezuela and, you know, find this one rock and do all this stuff. And then that's fine. But if you come out of it and you're destitute and your wife left you and all that, that was not a good thing you were engaging in. I'm not saying you didn't engage with a spirit of some sort. I'm saying it wasn't a good one. So if you're going to get into this shit, Ouija boards or whatever, don't recommend it. But if you are, if you have, you know, the scrotal fortitude to actually test these spirits and be like, who are you? What's your name? What is your purpose here? And if they can't answer a certain set of questions, tell them to get the fuck out of your house. You don't want that there. Trust me.
And I also don't think that there is real reason to have such fear of spirits. Because if you think about it, you know, we're spirits.
It's all you.
I'm a spirit, you're a spirit, you know, Sean's a spirit. These things that you're interacting with are spirits. And it, you know, it's just, yeah, I mean, maybe it's they have the unfair advantage of being able to read your mind and do things very magically. But at the very core level, we're made up of the same kind of shit. So I don't like whenever people try and push fear of demons or fear of the devil or fear of Satan. You're going to know that. Like, you're going to experience that level of vibration, I think. Like, you're, you know, in other words, test the spirit in that kind of way. Like, if you're getting some kind of, like, you know, for example, we had a dark magician on our show just a few days ago, and he is somebody, he literally sacrifices chickens as his job. That is his job. He sacrifices chickens. People pay him, and he'll sacrifice a chicken, drip the blood over a fire, say some kind of incantation, all while he's inside of this pentagram that is inside of this circle where he's like full on magic.
It was the first time I actually felt uncomfortable. Like, I actually related to people that don't want to talk about tarot or talk about, you know, because it's like they're scared of that. They don't want to open that door. But like, that was the one that was like, that's a little too much for my taste. You know what I'm saying? But hey, you know, people are going to do what they're going to do.
I can't say that I'm a fan of sacrifice. I'm not. I'm right. not there.
Oh, I mean, if you want to go with the Bible, look at the first five books of the Old Testament. That was a regular practice, like once a week, to do lambs or goats or chickens or whatever. So it's not outside of the realm of possibility. I'm not a fan of that either, which is why I contest that the God in the Old Testament was a little bit of a different, maybe he was on his period as to the God in the New Testament, because it seemed like a totally different fucking thing to me, and which is heresy. I get it. Don't come at me, Christians. But
he was, what he was going on with, though, is that there were certain times where he knew he had to carry out the ritual exactly right. And it's according to whatever spirit or entity or demon or angel or God or whatever that he is asking for this sacrifice to be received from. Right. And so he would talk about, you know, certain demons of the Goetia, as a lot of occultists like to dive into, where you can basically, certain demons are good for certain things. You know, like if you're trying to get rich, you call on old boy over here. If you're trying to find
like the
love,
saints. Yeah. Saint of love or peace or whatever the fuck. Yeah.
Archetypes again.
Same, exactly. The same kind of thing. And he said that he was working with this one very powerful demonic spirit to carry out this sacrifice. And he knew that he did the ritual wrong. I think he used quails instead of using chickens for the sacrifice. And
yep.
he
kind of half-assed it. Yeah.
Because he had more quails. Yeah, he had like more quails. And I guess the demon was like, these little pieces of shit, like you're giving me this. And anyway, it was really strange because he goes, he knew that he fucked up, because the moment that he was done, like carrying out the ritual, he got such like an abundance of like scared and worry and like anxiety like crazy all night.
Again, whatever you're serving, not good probably.
Right. Well, so much so that he had to get up out of his bed in the middle of the night to go out and repeat the actual process, because that demon was, he basically said like, look, if you don't make it right, I'm going to make your life hell in some kind of way. And that's the way that he was experiencing that. Now, I'm never going to be calling on no fucking demon. Like, I'm not an idiot. Like, I don't think that that is a smart thing to do personally. Although a lot of magicians will say, oh, well, you know, the demons, they're kind of useful in that way, because they don't necessarily have like, is this right? Is it wrong? Kind of waiting period to where the demons will carry out the sacrifice of whatever it is that you're asking them faster than an angel would, per se.
Right.
And no, I think it comes down to what you're comfortable with.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I think it just comes down to with what you're comfortable with. Like in your mind, like I think all three of us could agree, like we're probably not going to be evoking some type of demon, because in our mind, that's probably not the thing to do. And so that's not the thing we're going to do. And if we ever did, we would feel some type of way about it, you know? And so I think that's really what, like you said, you know, back in the day, people were doing sacrifices all the time. We might not agree with that practice, but it is a facet of this reality. And for whatever reason, it works.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a tool. It's like anything else. It's a tool, and you can use it for good or bad. And you can also, you know, have your perspective as it's good or it's bad, and whether it's good or it's bad doesn't really matter if your perspective is it's bad or it's good. It gets so tangled. And what I was trying to say is, Jonathan, I agree with you. I don't like people spreading fear about doing these types of things, especially since when it comes down to it, from what I can see, it all has to do with the individual person. Mm-hmm. There's never been one time when somebody's been like, well, I was dabbing with a Ouija board and I met this spirit named fucking Nosferatu or whatever, and he made me do this stuff. Okay, but who pulled the knife out? Who stabbed somebody in the eye? That was you still, right?
Right.
Okay, so it does come down to you. And I hate saying reality is subjective, but in your subjective world, it is. There are certain things that are objective about reality, but when you're experiencing things by yourself, that is subjective to you, especially if you're not conversing with other people or bouncing ideas off people or, you know, being social, whatever. But like if you're fucking around with the spirit and the spirit tells you, you should go kill this person, it's still up to you. I hate to be like, oh, you don't have mental issues. Maybe you do. Right. But at the end of the day, who pulled the trigger?
who plunged the knife into somebody's throat. It was still you. Whether you were under the influence of something or not, it was still your body doing that, your brain conducting your hand to do that. It sounds harsh.
Conceded to that.
What's that?
I said, like, basically your weakness conceded to those actions.
Right. So, yeah, there are influences. There are influences like drug commercials, which, oh, I've had this conversation, but, like, ask your doctor about Latuda. I don't know of anybody who's ever gone to their doctor and been like, how about Latuda? What do you think about that for me?
I was like, supposed to ask.
No. But if you do and you take it and you die, totally on you. Yes. Mm-hmm. Big Pharma is terrible, and their direct-to-consumer marketing is awful and should be illegal. But you still made the choice. So is that free will or was that predetermined? I mean, here we go again, like running in circles.
Yep.
You know, one of my favorite shows is called Once Upon a Time. And I know it sounds.
That's a great show. PG lame, show. Good for the I family. Yeah.
So good. Right. But like there's this character. His name is Rumpelstiltskin on there. He's kind of a douchebag. But I love him. Like I love that, like just dick mentality. But he says something on there.
I'm going to clip that sound drop.
But he says something on there to where it's always stuck with me, where he goes, all magic comes with a price, or comes for a price, right? And it's like, yeah, I mean, if you're reaching out to demons, or if you're reaching out to angels or some kind of spirits or something like that, there's going to be some kind of requirement of some kind of price, I think, especially if you're working with the dark side. I don't know necessarily for the lighter side, the angels and the light beings and stuff like that. But
light workers. We're here for love.
Yeah, I feel weird about that kind of shit too. But
I hate it.
But you know, I think that it's all about getting to know the entity or the spirit that you're working with before you ask it to carry out something for you. Because ultimately, I think, like I was saying earlier, those spirits or whatever are made up of whatever you're made up of. So if there's a way that you can do it on your own, by getting into some witchy stuff or saying a prayer or doing some kind of magic, that not necessarily calling upon some other kind of entity, just knowing that that power is already residing inside of you, then I think that there's probably not a whole lot of repercussion. And an example that I want to make here is, so it was, I don't know, 5-6 months ago, we did this show. It was on money spells. Just out of curiosity, want to see if they work, whatever, right? So we carry out, you know, all of the things. We're lighting the green candle and we're saying
some very simple thing. It wasn't like very detailed. It was super simple. You light a candle, you stare into it, you think, you know, you use your mind. It's super simple.
Money, 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 money.
Right.
You're basically imagining what life would be like if you had the money that you're trying to
receive. You're intentionally visualizing the outcome, not the process. Yeah.
And actually, they say that you're supposed to do that same thing in prayer, that whenever you pray, you're supposed to imagine that reality as if it's already happening. And it's the same way within, you know, these magical things. So basically, you would stare into this flame, into this green candle, you would write, you know, maybe a name or a specific number that you're hoping to achieve on a piece of bay leaf. And then you would take that bay leaf and you'd stick it in your pocket or in your wallet or something like that. Some people like to burn it or whatever. And it was so strange, dude, because I shit you not, and this could have been total coincidence, I don't believe in coincidences. The next week was the most amount of money I ever made in my life. Like it was like on a week basis.
Probably just a coincidence.
It was insane. the timing of that. Right. And it was like, all right, well, you know, and I don't know what to make of that. We haven't done another money spell since. It would be interesting to try that out again though, Sean.
Well, you can look at that in a couple ways too, because I've heard, you know, I've listened to several shows of people that come on, they're like the trans surfing thing, or I'm jumping realities. And there's been people I've listened to that are like, yes, I totally jumped realities and I'm in a different dimension now on purpose than when like I was born or whatever. I'm like, wait a minute, you on purposely jumped into this dimension. Okay, something's wrong with you. Why would you on purpose? How bad was your dimension before you jumped into this one? Have you seen what's going on? You're out of your goddamn mind. Either way. Yeah. But it is interesting. And we did talk to, what was his name? Nick Hinton.
We've talked to him a couple times, and he used to be real into Randonautica and trans surfing and, like, you know, changing the timeline you're in and all that. He's actually gone super Christian the last couple of years, which I respect. We actually talked to him after that happened, and he's still got a lot of the same ideas, but he's got a nuanced kind of different way that he looks at that now. And that's fine. I'm still interested in that. I want to hear that perspective too. But yeah, it is weird. Like, I'm not interested in really jumping realities. I want to see what this one's got going on, because it's weird enough for me. I don't know if I could handle any more weird. I can do that every night when I go to bed. When I have dreams, like, that's enough of a reality twist for me. And then I'll come back to the thing I know, you know, my house and stuff.
Mm-hmm. I think that's just, there's another way of explaining what's going on right there. Whenever people say that they're kind of jumping to a higher vibration, or they're jumping to a different timeline or something like that. And it goes back to an old saying that basically, if you change yourself, you can change the world. Right. And I think that that's really what's going on right there, because you only have a perspective. And if you change that perspective, you're going to view the world very, very differently.
Right. For you. Right.
Well, I mean, and it's always a domino effect. Like, if you wake up and there's a negative thing that happens to you, maybe you stub your toe on the corner of your bed, or, you know, you get your dick caught in your zipper as you're trying to take a piss in the morning or something.
I don't have that
like
problem. It's too small.
Yeah.
I'm right there with you, buddy.
Yes.
But, like, if there are certain things that can have an effect on the rest of your day, if you're not paying attention and bringing your level of awareness to the forefront.
You got to catch yourself in those little moments like that, where you're like, why did I get so pissed off about that? That's where you got to stop and take a breather and be like, that's not that big of a deal, buddy. Your higher self has to come in and pat yourself on the back and be like, it's okay, dude.
Right. And we were talking earlier about, like, you know, people doing drugs or doing awful shit, but, like, we don't think too much about the thoughts that we're having just on a day to day. You know, if you look at things and you're able to transmute a situation into something that you learn something from, or you're able to see the beauty in something that maybe isn't that beautiful, you know what I'm saying? Then that's where you're shifting your reality. You know what I mean? Cause you're looking at things differently, and it just feels better.
Yeah. Oh, dude. And like, just the simple thing of that one negative thing could have such a domino effect on the rest of the day. Now think about it. They say that on average, the average person has 60,000 thoughts in a day. So if you have
that
first
all?
Thing in the morning, I mean, somewhere around there, but
I'm in the mid 20s
thing in the morning, probably somewhere like that. That first thing in the morning, like, if you allow that thing to play the domino effect for the rest of the day, it's not only everything that you experience in this physical reality is going to suck, or at least you're going to have the perspective that it's going to suck. It's every thought that you're going to have moving forward for the rest of that day that's going to suck. So it is important to catch yourself and be like, you know what? Because I can't tell you how many times where I got pissed at something, and I'm pissed throughout the day, and I'm like, I forgot why I was even pissed in the first place, but I'm just carrying around this energy of just darkness. And
I think as dudes, we do that a lot, where you don't even know why you're pissed off about something, but you're just, this fucking sucks. I don't know. Right. And then you think about it, and you're like, oh, did that start with that bitch cutting me off this morning? Oh, it might have.
That's usually how it starts. Traffic.
And it's always an Asian lady. Sorry to pick on you, but it's true. Sorry.
I mean, they suck at driving. It's just a fact.
Oh, God.
Well, you guys, thank you so much for coming on. We're going to wrap this up, but any closing thoughts you have or words of wisdom before we head out of here?
Yeah, just try and keep an open mind about a lot of this kind of stuff. The people that are looking into these topics, they're not, you know, into the dark occult. They're not worshiping Satan. They don't have a demon that they're regularly conversing with. Not all of them. I'm sure some of them do, but
some of them for
somebody,
sure.
Yeah, but just because somebody decides to shuffle some tarot cards, or somebody decides to open a magic book, or somebody decides to look at near-death experiences, past lives, you know, psychedelics, anything like that, it's not satanic, it's not dark, it's just another way to be able to understand the other side, understand where you come from. You know, like, not everybody believes the same story, and I think that that's the beautiful part about humanity, is that we all have limitless perspectives. For as many people are on this earth, there are that many perspectives of this reality. And so we should cherish those people that think a little bit differently than us rather than judging them for thinking differently. So yeah, if you're, you know, open-minded in that kind of sense, and you're interested in learning about what's on the other side and all that fun jazz, come check us out at Meta Mysteries Podcast. We are available on all podcast platforms. We also have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/metamysteries. And we go live every Wednesday night. All of the one, we call them, all of our listeners can join us every Wednesday night if they sign up for the Patreon show. And as a matter of fact, we just every so often we have like special guests that come on for those shows. And so then all the guests can converse with the special guests that we have on. Last night we had the psychic, as I mentioned earlier. We've had other shows where we get magicians or certain experiencers that come on the show and kind of just share whatever they experience and share their perspectives on just, you know, reality in general. So if that's what you're interested in, or you're got a little curiosity, maybe you're like, what's really going on with magic? What's really going on with witchcraft? What's really going on in metaphysics? Meta Mysteries is the place to go for that, baby.
That's where it's at. And I also just want to say thank you for having us on. And I really appreciate, you know, your openness and your own curiosity. You're a very curious person. I can tell you're very intelligent and
very curious.
And,
yes.
Yeah. And so I really appreciate that for sure. Cause we have had bad experiences, you know, because in other people's minds, especially those that are super religious, they think that we're just talking to demons. And I'm going to be honest, I haven't spoken to one, not yet, not at all, not my whole life, you know.
Blame.
What I'm saying? So, I'm
what are you doing wrong?
I know, I mean, I'm playing with tarot cards, I'm trying everything, but it's not...
You have to
you
have
know,
13 black candles, I mean, right. There's certain right. things you gotta do.
Right, yeah,
maybe
and
it's
if
your
anything
intention.
Happens, yeah.
You don't want to talk happens, to demons.
Right, if anything happens, you know, just get an old priest and a young priest and come see me, you know what I'm saying? But everything's good right now, so... But yeah, no, once again, just thank you for having us on and being open to our weirdness.
Oh, of course. Our listeners are very fucking well aware of our weirdness. So there, it's no surprise from you guys, trust me. But well, thanks, everybody. Thanks, you guys, for coming on. Check out Meta Mysteries. Check out Cult of Conspiracy. And also, shout out to our boy, Josh Monday. He does...
Boner.
Wow. I didn't mean to hit that, but geez. Josh Monday does a segment every Sunday. It's like a Sunday sermon. He's not a preacher, but he does his best, and it's great. It's very interesting. I always love listening to him talk. So we'll talk to you. What's that?
He's the man. We love Josh Monday.
Oh, he's the best. I can't wait to hang out with that guy, actually. Little sober for me, but that's fine. I can deal with that. All right, you guys, have a good night. We will talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Legit Bet. Please address all content grievances to gofuckyourself@yourmom.com. See you next week.
Hey.
Hello. Hi.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.